Good evening. It is Saturday, the 4th of June, and it's 10 to 9 in the evening. I'm Cindy. I'm in the Corporation of Victoria within the Corporation of Australia. I just want to remind everybody that our corporations are doing everything in their power to make life convenient for us. Everything is about our safety and our security. And if you believe that, you'll wake up with a unicorn in your bed tomorrow morning. We keep hearing about their ideologies and everything being about safety, security, convenience, diversity, inclusivity, sustainability. Equality. Let's talk a little bit about equality. So we had a bunch of new billionaires crop up over the last couple of years, something in the realm of like thousands of new billionaires, which means that was basically wealth transfer from the poor or the middle classes up to the top tiers. These same people are preaching equality. You know, equality might be something like putting all academic research papers and journals online for the whole world to have access to information. That would be a type of equality. That would be a good use of technology for everyone to have access to publicly funded research. Yet everything is behind a paywall. You know, like it's equality, equality, but it's not equality. They say to you, you know, like, well, we're going to geofence you and you're going to have a digital ID and we're going to measure everything, but we're going to call that equality. Basically, everything they say is an absurdity. It's a contradiction in terms. So when you hear equality, you must understand this is discrimination going through the roof. We've been bamboozled with discrimination and anti-bullying for the last, I think, about 20 years. This has been pumped through the schools, the education sector. And this is to brainwash the children into thinking that, well, if the teachers are telling us and if the education system and our curriculum is teaching us to not, you know, not to be bullies and to be tolerant, well, then everything else they say must align with that, when in fact it's the opposite. There isn't inclusivity. A geofence is not inclusivity. If you don't have a digital ID or if you don't have, you know, the magic juice pumped into your arm, that's not inclusivity, is it? Okay. So there's a few things I really want to talk about. Where do I start? I do really want to talk about this transhumanism agenda. A couple of items have popped up this week in the Grawn, the Guardian newspaper, that rag, that propaganda rag. And so they've placed in the public realm now, in the public consciousness, because, you know, transhumanism is a topic that really only people interested in it will find out about. So you've got to go to, you're either going to be watching those movies with a non-sheeple mind. You'll be looking at these movies and going, oh, okay, so these are the plans. Or you'll be reading books written by people like Yuval Noah Harari, or Kurzweil, who was, you know, the probably the godfather of transhumanism and singularity principles and things like this. Or you're looking right into the World Economic Forum and what they've been talking about. So the Guardian has, like in 1 week, put an article about smart pacifiers or smart dummies in children's mouths. So these pacifiers, you know, read breathing and things like that and alert, you know, the parents if something is wrong. And of course, it's all about your safety and security and convenience. When really what you're doing is putting more radiation in your children's face, in their mouths. It couldn't get any closer to them. And the data is being lifted from babies. This is where we're at. So I know a lot of people who were in the same boat as me growing up, watching series like Beyond 2000, where we were exposed to what would come, you know, after 2000, what amazing technological advancements would happen. And we got things like flying cars and, you know, like ovens that would cook the whole meal for you. And we looked forward to these things, but they never came to pass. And for the fact that all these cool, convenient, you know, outlandish kind of things didn't happen, we've now got a mindset that when we hear about things, futuristic things, we turn a blind eye and we go, that's never going to happen in our lifetime. You know, that's just bullshit. You know, they're just stories. People won't accept it. Well, 2 years ago, we were talking about the imminent financial collapse that people shrug their shoulders at. And here it is. You see it at the petrol pump, at the gas pump. People in Melbourne are paying $7 and $8 for a head of lettuce. We talked about the collapse of the food supply. We've been talking about lab-grown meats, lab-grown food. Now we're going to have lab-grown breast milk and things like that. And we've got the shortages going along with these things as well. It's not just, you know, oh, this is a new product that will be available to you that you can choose. No, they are substituting what was available to us with these new synthetic products. So what's the point I'm trying to make is that this transhumanism thing is not something in the future because you're thinking of, you know, that series synth, and that's, you know, you have to have a synth in your house for there to be transhumanism happening in your life and in your children's lives. You're never going to see that glorified, amazing version of it. This is really the point here. They're going to destroy humanity. And all the while, people will have these images of flying cars and immortality and robots that do all the labor for them whilst they go on holiday and learn how to oil paint and start. And, you know, so you can do all the things you wanted to do. And in the meantime, they're destroying us. There was another article about women having artificial wombs and not having to carry babies anymore, and liberating women from the experience of pregnancy. That was one. And then there was another one about Tamagotchi babies. So you wouldn't even have a lab-grown baby in an artificial womb. No, we're talking about you will have an imaginary baby, a virtual baby that you can switch on and off. And this is what they're priming the next generation, which is very likely more infertile than the last generation. So even if you can't yet see the infertility rates from the potion that's been given to people in the last 2 years, all you need to do is look a little bit further back into history where we do have data. The men are infertile. Men that are 60 years old have the same amount of testosterone as men in their 20s. You know why? Because the men in their 20s have been poisoned so much. They've been emasculated with poison. So it's not just the social engineering and all the bullshit and the soy lattes. It's not just what they're drinking. It's what's been put into their bodies. Women's infertility is at a record high. You know, when I was in Athens, there were infertility clinics all over the place, like 7-Elevens. What the fuck? What is that all about? women unable to have babies, and I'm not talking about women in their 40s who have, you know, decided to have babies late and all the rest of it. So the infertility, we've done it in so many ways. We've been poisoned, biologically poisoned. We've been impoverished. We don't have the means to have a baby and raise it properly. We have, you know, the social engineering of you must have a career. You're nothing if you don't have a career. You're nothing if you're not a strong, independent woman. We've had the problems with the sexes. We've had so many things geared towards reducing the populations of Western civilization, the Western world. And I talk about the Western world because that's what I know about. I'm not leaving out the other parts of the world for any other reason, but that I know about Australia. I know that there is something called human growth hormone. So when a woman gets pregnant, the baby, the fetus, whatever, causes a reaction for the production of human growth hormone so the baby can grow. Are they playing around with things? Okay, so now what happens with something that was put into those magic potions is something that causes antibodies to be produced upon receipt of human growth hormone. So basically the body was being trained to attack the thing that would nourish and help baby grow. So they caused infertility in India, like an explosion of infertility. And I believe in Africa it was found. That's where it was actually found, I think, where it was proven. So this is no small thing. This transhumanism goes hand in hand with the depopulation agenda. So I know lots of people who understand the population reduction that's going on, but they sort of turn their heads when it comes to transhumanism. They're not interested. It's not real enough. It's, you know, too far off into the future. But it really isn't. And there was another article in The Guardian, which I would like to read, which Temora is the proper way to pronounce it, but phonetically it's spelled Temora. She's a new friend of mine. She's a beautiful soul, and she posted this article today. And I think it's so important that I want more people to know about it, and I would like to, you know, just share my thoughts on breaking up heaps. Oh really? Well, I hope the playback's okay. I'll keep going though. So The Guardian posted today, I don't know if you can see it, this article, and it says, beyond our ape-brained meat sacks, can transhumanism save our species? So meat sack is, you know, the cool way to talk about the body now, because, you know, it's just, and this is for, I would like the people who are new ageists or people that are into the new age movement and people who are spiritual and religious and who dismiss the body, that everything is about the spirit and the soul and the mind, apparently, that, you know, this is a very dangerous way to think when you are a human being and you're not a ghost or a spirit just hanging around and, you know, in the room. I know great philosophers have toiled with the subject and the dichotomy and, you know, like, you know, the brain, you know, the mind and the body and, you know, is it one or is it two things? Is it separate things? At this point in time, they are not separate things, okay? Cindy is made up of a body and a mind and a spirit and a soul and whatever else comes with it. And none of us can prove that after this life that anything else continues. Now, it's nice to, and it's great if you do believe it, and I can't prove that it doesn't go anywhere, but for the time being on this planet, I would very much like people to stop dismissing the body. or the mind or their experience. And I would very much advocate for people to believe in this life and to value it and cherish it as it should be. You know, whatever comes next, you'll get there if you're going there. But for now, you know, we can't just sit back and go, oh, you know, my spirit's going to live on, my soul's going to live on, and it's all going to be good after I die. Because I actually think this kind of idea is actually being implanted into people. And why do I say that? Because a lot of transhumanism is very much based on letting go of the meat sack, getting rid of the body. You know, like this thing is holding us back is what they're saying. But of course, like everything else, it's not just philosophy and an ideology that they're pushing onto us. It's actually something that they're doing to us. So think about all the kinds of injuries that come from all the different kinds of medications and potions and pollution, okay? And think about the damage that has been done to humanity, whether it's obesity, metabolic diseases, endocrine disorders, neurological disorders, heart problems. I mean, we're talking about the whole gamut, right? Now, to liberate those people, okay, those people who don't really have, who are disabled now in ways, okay, whether it's, you know, some, being on the spectrum, or it's because you're bald, or because you have terrible acne, or because you can't walk, or because, but so many reasons, okay? Equality, okay? And so they've given us that the obesity is okay, you know, love your body, don't be embarrassed. If you, now I think obesity is a proper disease. I think it's actually the result of poisoning. I don't think it's a lifestyle thing. So I need to clear that up before anyone gets offended. So, this, you know, like accept your body and accept, that's just, those are just words. I've been much heavier than I am now. I actually gained 14 kilos over 2 months when my endocrine system went out the window. I was very, very sick. And I can tell you that I didn't overeat. It is something that can happen. And so when I see obese people, I feel so sad because I know what they receive from what kind of looks they get and how many people think, oh, you don't eat right and you don't exercise and, you know, you've done this to yourself. No, no. Obese people didn't exist, you know, 60 years ago, 50 years ago. And it's not because people, you know, there weren't people who enjoyed a sedentary lifestyle or didn't enjoy their food 50, 60 years ago. No, this is a part of destroying humanity, the metabolic process and the endocrine process. So all of these, oh, it's okay to be neurologically different. It's okay to be sick. It's okay to be diseased. This is like the program we keep getting. Now, anyone who is sick and diseased, okay, and disabled, doesn't matter how many times you say to them, you know, it's okay. It's like preaching the positivity to somebody who's got a lot of depression. Oh, be positive, you know, like it's all okay. Or somebody's having an anxiety attack, saying to them, there's nothing to worry about. They're not going to feel better. Point being is that with all this sickness and disability, we are being offered a place where we can be included and where we can be equal next to the other person, because the avatar I choose to use in the metaverse is going to be as cool as anybody else's. They're going to be equal avatars with equal capabilities and abilities. So, how did I get there? What was the point? So infertility is a really big thing, and they're being, and what's going to be offered up is virtual babies. Okay. Because we're going to have, millions of women who won't be able to carry a baby, and they're going to be offered up virtual babies. So anyway, let me read more about this. Beyond our ape brained meat sacks. So they're saying that human intelligence, right? They're saying that we are ape-brained. So they've been harnessing, okay, harvesting, collecting human intelligence now through social media, through gaming, and now they're going to be doing it just through everything. So through every Zoom meeting, through working online, from children studying online, these smart boards at school that will be tracking their eyes, tracking what they're learning. It's too big of a topic to try and cover all right now, but so they're doing that so that they can make artificial intelligence. So it doesn't really equate very well, right, with ape brain, because if their artificial intelligence was awesome, we'd be learning, you know, from the artificial intelligence and not the other way around. Can transhumanism save our species? So that's predicated, like the premise here is that our species is going to die out for some reason, it's going to become extinct for some reason. If we don't call upon some new approach. Now, that's something we need to dispel. We need to disabuse people of the idea that we are heading to extinction naturally and that transhumanism or any other ism is going to save us. It's the other way around. Transhumanism, I will read and you will see, is actually kind of going, well, let's beat them to the extinction. Let's kill ourselves. Transhumanism is really very closely related to New Ageism. And I'm not going to, I'm unable at this very moment to put that into convincing words or be persuasive, because it's just something that's brewing. And I need to percolate it better. This is human racism, as in hating ourselves and self-loathing. All right, so I continue. The 21st century will be make or break for humanity, says Oxford University transhumanist Elise Bohan. If we get it right, she thinks we might find something better. Aging cured, death conquered, work ended. The human brain reverse engineered by AI. Babies born outside the womb. Virtual children, non-human partners. I think I've talked about all of these. Non-human partners is something you can do with a haptic suit. So you'll be wearing a bodysuit that has electrodes on it, and you'll be, you know, kissing somebody, and but there will be no one there. You know, somebody looking at you from the outside will see somebody who's wearing a suit, with goggles on or whatever. This is worse than, you know, self pleasure. This is just disgusting. It's really sick. And then having, you know, a virtual baby come of that, you know, like what are we talking about? The future of humanity could be virtually unrecognizable by the end of the 21st century. Now, I don't want you to switch off going, oh, we're not even near the end of the 21st century, Cindy, because the thing is, those smart boards, those fisheye lenses are in the classrooms right now. Your kids are using tablets and computers and mobile phones right now. Your food supply is being shorted right now. The geofencing equipment is in your street already. And that's if we get the transition right. If we get it wrong, well, if we get it wrong, doesn't matter. You know, we just got rid of the entire human species. You know, big deal. I'm a smart person. I have a PhD from MIT. So, you know, if I get it wrong, well, you know, who is going to get it right? The arrogance, the hubris is it's beyond description, really. The future is wildly scary, says the young philosopher, macro historian futurist. She's only 30 years old, by the way, with a smile. I can't lie to you about that. In 10 years' time, it's all going to look pretty different. And in another 10 years, that's a total event horizon for me. So I want everyone to reflect on the 2 years that went past like this. I mean, I feel like I'm losing my life day by day. Like the days are just flying past. 10 years' time, she's referring to 2030, by the way. I think it's eminently plausible at that point that the game has changed in some very fundamental way, whether for good or bad. Like, shrug the shoulders, whether for good or bad. Bohan, 31, is speaking from a sunny Mosman apartment where she is house-sitting and looking after the plants. It's a distance away from the Hawkesbury River on the outskirts of Sydney where she grew up, a place where pretty spots... a place with pretty spots, but where it was tough to be a smart kid. And it is a half world away from Oxford University, where she forms part of the Future of Humanity Institute. She forms part of the Future of Humanity Institute. So did you know that there are designated people who work at the Future of Humanity Institute and decide what's going to happen to your progeny? Who make decisions on what is going to happen to the human species. At a loss for words. She's in Sydney seeing family and promoting her new book, Future Superhuman, Our Transhuman Lives in a Make or Break Century. Superhuman. This is the carrots. They keep telling you you're going to be superhuman because you're going to have, Google in your head. You won't have to press a button. That would make, if anything approaching superhuman, would mean that humanity gets out of control. To make anybody superhuman would be forfeiting the power and control that they have taken over the centuries. So if they want to completely dominate, if they want to determine what you eat, who you sleep with, if you can have a baby, if you can't have a baby, they want to determine what you can buy at the shops and how much fuel you can use and how many carbon credits you can have. Who on earth can find congruency between that and making you superhuman? You'd have to be super stupid to believe this. The subtitle isn't a gambit. I believe that, she says. We are in the century that defines the future of humanity like no other. Sorry, the subtitle is Our Transhuman Lives in a Make or Break Century. So they know they're going to make it or break it. And anyone with who's actually looked at it is, if they manage to do what they're trying to do, they really are going to break it. I suppose none of us will be around to kind of go, well, they broke it. But I really want to live out the rest of my life. So that's why I do this. Transhumanism is a movement that aims to address or end what Bohan calls the tragedies of reality, aging, sickness, and involuntary death. So these are the tragedies of reality, aging, sickness, and involuntary death. I think they're just a part of life, aging, sickness, and involuntary death. And anything that is part of life, that is part of humanity, that is part of, us mortals being mortal, it is like part of the deal, right? It's kind of like going, I want a car without wheels on it or something. Like, it doesn't make sense. It is, she writes, a philosophy and a project that aims to make us more than human. No, it's taking away our humanity. I used to read books when I could read books, because at the moment I can't read anything. I just got my head done in most of the time. And all those books, all the humanity, all the learning, all the euphoria, everything that humanity knows, all of our culture, it is based upon, the extremes of being human, the the extremely sublime and the beautiful moments, you know. And most people, you know, if you ask most people what was the most amazing day of their lives or the most beautiful experience they've ever had, many people will say it was the day my child was born, the day I found out I was pregnant, the day I got married, the day I swam with the dolphins, the day I climbed that mountain, the day I saw that person, that best sex that I ever had, that party that we had, the dancing that we did that night, the laughter that we had, the bonfire, you know, everything that is the most amazing, you know. If each person watching actually, you know, sits back and thinks, you know, what were the best times I had in my life? You know, find those things out and go and tell a young person, because young people are being, they're being brainwashed into thinking it's going to be something else. Make sure you tell them that it's real life things, that as fun as it is to play a video game, even those kids will tell you the best experience that they've had in their life so far has nothing to do with a computer game, but has to do with other human beings. And it was an immersion. It was an immersive experience, because they keep saying immersive experience with virtual reality and an immersive experience. The immersive experience is when a person is present in mind and body and soul. Your best experience in your life, I bet, has all three of those components in it. There was something glorious happening in your body, in your mind, and in your spirit all at the one time. And this is probably the thing that keeps us going and the thing that keeps us living and the thing that keeps us searching. It's never going to be a VR, a virtual reality experience. And you can't have one without the other. You can never have one without the other. You know, if we were never going to die, even if it was going to be in the meat sack, okay, life really would lose all its meaning if you knew that this was going to go on for another 1,000 years. We'd all probably be trying to kill ourselves. We're not being made more human. We're losing our humanity. Whether we recognize or understand it, that project has already begun, she says, and it will transform our world and minds and bodies within our lifetimes. They're going to transform the world, our minds, and our bodies. Not only is it happening, she says, but this transition is necessary if humanity is to survive in perpetuity. Right, so we need to get rid of humans so that humanity can live in perpetuity. These people are like highly acclaimed academics, by the way, and they're talking straight horse shit. And because they're academics with PhDs, people believe them. There's a photo over here, and it says, Elise Bowen says her new book is a love letter to humanity. She's telling them they're going to die. And they're calling it, you know, that they're going to take all their humanity and change their bodies forever and change the world and change their minds. And she calls it a love letter. Please read 1984, War is Peace, Ignorance is Strength, and Freedom is Slavery. For Bohan, it is no great leap to imagine that a baby born in 2030, may have its entire genome mapped at birth, that data uploaded to a central health record and cross-referenced at any medical appointment throughout its life. There is a blockchain baby in Ethiopia, by the way, so it's been blockchained at birth. It is no great stretch to think that AI will become the most powerful intellectual force of the century. Yeah, because they're extracting all human intelligence from all humans and rolling it into one. So, you know, that human consciousness might be transferred from our meat sacks bodies into a technological sphere. that the rise of AI and automation might render great swathes of human labor redundant, and that maybe if we get it right, that could leave more time for leisure, big thinking, meditation, connection. Yeah, connection with what? Connection with what? If you're locked down at home in a tiny home in the middle of a mega city, and you are only, you work online, you study online, you have a virtual baby, you don't travel because you don't have enough carbon credits and because they're rewilding all the forests. And even if you get to the forest, if they've made it a smart forest, and I made that post the other day, so that's documented. Athens has a smart forest. Sherwood Forest, the Robin Hood one? Yeah, that's been turned into a smart forest too. What kind of connection are we talking about, peeps? Yeah, you'll be like, just plug yourselves right in, you know, like, you know, the thing I plug my phone into, like, that's basically what you're going to have. And no, you're not going to have leisure. You're going to be bored out of your brain is what you're going, oh, not even that. They're going to give you hoops to jump through to keep you fucking busy. And they're going to dose you up on so many drugs so that you're out of your mind and you don't realize what you're missing out on. And so that you don't revolt. Big thinking, right? When they've taken all the human intelligence and put it into AI and it makes all the decisions in the world for you, what exactly are you going to be thinking about when you've, you know, when you've got no job either? Fucking idiots. Experiments are already underway in the realm of artificial wombs, and Bohan is sure, when viable, women will be clamoring. They're quoting it. They're going to be clamoring to be freed from the shackles of pregnancy, childbirth, and breastfeeding. Most women will tell you that that was the most, one of the best times in their lives. You know, especially the ones that didn't get a lot of medical interference and had a relatively good pregnancy, and who didn't succumb to all the shots and all the, you know, amniocentesis. And let's check this and let's give you that. And let's, you know, let's stick this into the kid and let's put this shit on its eyes and let's cause some, you know, what's it called? When the eyes turn yellow after the Hep B shot. Oh, and then when they can't suckle after that, you know, so like if you haven't had a lot of iatrogenic injury, childbearing and pregnancy can be one of the most beautiful times in a woman's life. But, you know, look, fuck that. The shackles of pregnancy and childbirth and breastfeeding. So have no bond, have no connection with that child. The book, she writes, is a love letter to humanity, but hers is a tough love. A love which sees a future for humanity, but not necessarily for human beings as we know it. Huh? What? I'll repeat that. A love which sees a future for humanity, but not necessarily for human beings as we know it. What the fuck is humanity if it doesn't belong to human beings? Is it something that I can find in a book? I don't know. I need somebody smarter to help me here. I really do. Let me know what you think about that. We love, we lose, we die. When Bohan first encountered transhumanism at around the age of 21, her first reaction was, it's crazy, it's science fiction, it's so far out, how weird, she says, but also how interesting. Her brother had bounded down the stairs and insisted they watch the documentary Transcendent Man about godfather of transhumanism, Ray Kurzweil. He thought they'd find it hilarious, which we did, but it introduced Bohan to the idea of rapid acceleration of growth in computer technology, technological singularity, the theoretical point at which the force of technological change becomes out of human control and can shape human civilization, and the idea that there was a future for humanity beyond what she calls ape-brained meat sacks. They make me want to believe, you know, like, oh, I'm trying, you know, I think about, you know, the creator, and there has to be a creator. Like, there has to be. But, you know, whether you connect or not, or can pray or not, is another story. But the more shit they talk, the more they push me to the point where it's like, you know what, man really didn't create this planet, because look at how they're trying to shape it now. You know, they're idiots. They're so stupid. You don't need a PhD to know how stupid these people are. They've got a God complex. There's something really wrong with their brains, and I don't know what it is. At the time, she was an English literature undergrad, obsessed with poetry and the written word. It was a point of sadness for me as a young person, recognizing that there were so many wonderful things that had already been written, forgetting all the things that would be written in the future, that I would never live long enough to encounter, to explore, and to put all these things together, she says. Not sure why she's disqualifying the writing and the English literature. I really don't understand. Like, I don't know. Fiction began to bore her as her interest in transhumanism increased. If fiction was all about exploring the human experience, it became evident that there was a tragic repetition. Tragic repetition. We work, we learn, we love, we lose, we die, she writes. Transhumanism offered something better. We work, we learn, we love, we lose, we die. I don't know, all the human things that I've done, that, you know, my life, I regret a lot of things that I have done or that I haven't done. I wish I could do more. I wish they'd let me do more. I wish they would let me live my life the way I want to live it. But even if, you know, it all ends tomorrow, it was, you know, it was enough. Fuck. These bastards. By the age of 28, she had written the world's first book-length history of transhumanism for her PhD at 28. It's ironic, she says, to have cleaved to this. She's always had an aversion to isms. They have a ring of cult-like fascination to them. Well, she was right about that. She belongs to a cult. We're building God, you know, and this is in quotation marks. Transhumanism is perhaps best known for preoccupation with achieving human immortality. A deathless life, however, is a confronting concept. I'm going to pause there. She talks about a deathless life. The thing about it is that she's not telling you is that it's a lifeless life at the same time. When your body isn't there, okay, when you're not there in mind, body, and spirit, your organic being, it's a lifeless fucking life, much like the lockdown life you had. A deathless life, however, is a confronting concept. As scarcity determines value, does not the fact that our time on earth is finite give that time its value? What exactly is tragic about death? For me, it is the loss of everything that matters. It's a loss of all things of value, she says. On the contrary, she says, if humans could go on in a state of robust health, could keep learning, you'd have this cumulative effect where our experiences and knowledge would accumulate much faster. Did somebody not teach her that that's the definition of culture? That, you know, I learn, I pass on to my child everything that I've learned, and that, you know, the child has like all that and gets to, you know, save space and learn new things and contribute and add. Like, did somebody forget to tell her what culture was? Like, does she need to do all the learning herself for all of time? I mean, there's so much bullshit here. I'm sorry I'm doing this to you. But I've got to share the load here, because otherwise, you know, I just turn it over in my head and I'm alone with all this crap. The things that our species could do with that, the mysteries of the universe that we could unlock. You know, most people are just happy to unlock the mysteries of their own mind and their own bodies and to enjoy this life, you know. the mysteries of, you know, most people can't figure out why they've got, you know, why they can't have a baby. Most people can't figure out, you know, why that person said that thing to them, or why, you know, he broke up with them, or, you know, like really normal, you know, human things. But, you know, we must, you know, unlock all the mysteries of the universe to make life meaningful somehow. The problems we could solve, you know, all these, the problems we could solve. Most people are trying to work out how they're going to put food on the table and how they're going to pay their mortgage. And, you know, she's trying to work out what kind of metaphysical problems they could solve and how they can get water on Mars, I suppose. And the depths of each other's souls that we could explore. So apparently we'll be able to explore the depths of people's souls if we upload some version of their thoughts into the cloud. I'd really appreciate, you know, some smart people to join this conversation and explain some things to me, because I'm kind of out of my depth here. Because I really want to just defer to all I see here is horseshit. Souls, she admits, is a loaded word, but without an alternative vocabulary for what makes consciousness, she's not averse to using spiritual language. And so here we have the New Ageism come in, and here is where we have something I like to talk about often, communitarianism, which has one of the pillars of communitarianism, okay, is religion. And I know people are aversive to religion because you've been made aversive to religion, because if you weren't made aversive to religion, then you wouldn't accept the new gods of science and the new gods of technology to replace and to substitute that void inside humanity, which always kind of looks outwards and says, I'm human, this is my life, this is how much, but I don't know what made me, and it's something more than humans that made me. So because we have that intrinsic, inherent thing built into us, they need to replace it. So they've got to take away those gods, you know, those unknown gods that we have, and replace them with the gods of technology and science. And getting back to communitarianism, this current, this pillar, is slowly seeping into the public consciousness. So they're not saying this is your new religion. Go and, you know, go to the altar and have, you know, and confess and do this stuff. But most people out there are like, science is my God. You know, technology is a God. It's inevitable progress. That's actually how a religious person will talk to you about inevitability of what's going to happen to your soul and stuff. So the new religion won't look like a religion, just like the war doesn't look like a war, just like the weapons are different this time. So, and this communitarian new ageism stuff merges into transhumanism. And I'll give you the bit that I have kind of clarified. So we've got people, the normies, you know, who are devout to science and technology, going, you know, yes, I will take this new life. I will adapt and I will adopt all this stuff. And I'm going to live in this virtual world that you're going to offer me. I'm going to enter the metaverse. I accept that. And so they're accepting the hardware, the software of this other, this replacement, this substitute. And then we've got New Ages going, I live in a parallel universe. I'm 5G, I'm vibrating in 5D. I'm on some other frequency, they say. They're living another reality in their own minds without the help of hardware, virtual reality, goggles and stuff. So that there's going to be a cross section between these two streams of thought. These people who are willingly walking into another reality, another dimension of virtual reality, mixed reality, as supported by the technology. And at the same time, what seems to be this diametric opposite group, they're not quite so different when you sort of boil it right down, when they're talking about, I'm living in another reality, I'm in another dimension, I'm on some other frequency, and these things on this planet don't bother me because my mind, and I don't even know what they're saying. The point is, what they're saying is that they're somewhere else. They're not part of the here and now. They're not part of this earth. They're not part, they're not even like inside their bodies. They're something else. So that's where this is heading. Keep those things in mind. I will try to bring these things together. Now, I know I've heard a lot of feelings of people who are new agers, and I understand that, and that's fine. You know, you can block, delete, unfriend, or do all of that. But keep your eyes open. Keep your eyes open and see what's going to come in the next few years. And, you know, I haven't been really wrong so far. So, and it's not just me not being wrong. Like, the people who are really digging into this and really delving into it, and people that do much more serious work than I do, whether it's, you know, Nikki Rapana, or it's Whitney Webb, or Julianne Romanello, or even Alison McDowell, they're finding the same, they're not going to describe it in the same words, but the facts that they're finding are similar. Maybe their conclusion, it sounds a little bit different to mine, but we're all sort of like poking around in the same arena. Is transhumanism encroaching on domains that religion has traditionally held? I think yes, she says. When Bohan was a PhD student, we're nearly finished, by the way, and my battery's about to go, so I'll try to wrap it up. When Bohan was a PhD student, she gave her first big paper at a conference. Afterwards, a biologist came up to her and congratulated her on her work. Then he looked me in the eye and whispered to me, "We're building God, you know." She chuckles. I looked back at him and I said, "Yeah, I know. We're building God. You know, I don't have one God. I don't, you know, I had, you know, I believe that there's a creator. I just, you know, but I'm still agnostic." And I'm offended. You know, I'm offended. I'm like, what kind of idiot mortal thinks like this? Like, how arrogant do you really have to be? And I'm pretty arrogant, I would say. So, and I can't even fathom how arrogant you'd have to be. They knew they didn't mean it as a religion, she says, but a lot of what has been talked about in religion, omniscience, omnipotence, hopefully benevolence, like, where they pull that out of? We are at least getting closer to that all-seeing, all-knowing, all-exploring force. Who controls that force or those forces is, of course, a critical question. The early 21st century's rapid growth in technology has seen power and wealth accumulate and concentrate among a small number of predominantly white men. A criticism leveled at transhumanists is that they never quite stopped clinging to the sci-fi that fascinated them as young boys. There is a degree to which many of them probably still are little boy fantasists, she says Bohan, but they happen to be very, very clever little boy fantasists who also have engineering degrees and are very capable at building reusable rockets and what have you. Don't think we can dismiss the real tangible species advancing projects they're actually at the helm of. Okay, so a lot of, I'm going to say it, and I don't care how many people I offend, most people who are in IT, these men, are on the spectrum. Most of them actually don't know what humanity is. Most of them don't even recognize human emotions, but hey, you know, they've got fantasies. Regulating technology during this transhuman transition, argues Bohan, is not a good idea. All things being equal, would I rather a politician or cluster politicians ruling nuclear powers of the nation states? Or would I rather someone with a PhD from MIT who's really, really smart and understands the technological systems as best as a human being can? She asks. I'd rather it be the tech geek. So what she's done there is she's gone, okay, politicians have no connection to the people. They're not elected, so they're not acting on the people's behalf. She's just gone, politicians, whom we've all, you know, we all know how much we shouldn't trust them and how corrupt they are and blah, 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 blah. And she's going, tech geeks, they're, you know, they want what's good for humanity, so we should put humanity into their hands. But that said, I'd rather it not be a human at all. Here we go. I'd rather it not be a human at all. A technological solution to regulation. Listen up, people. We're doing this. This is happening. They're going to get rid of representative government. That's why you're going to see a lot of, you know, charges against politicians, and they're even going to use the COVID lies that we knew were lies, that we were screaming. They're going to say, oh my God, look what you did. You killed people. People are going to lose all trust in representative government. So it is one psyop on top of the other. They want to get rid of representative government. They want the invisible hand of technology ruining and ruling your lives. And you know what? When it's the tech doing it, what are you going to argue with? Has anyone tried arguing with algorithms? I have. Try getting some justice with that. God. A technological solution to regulation would free decision-making from human biases, short-termism, and tribalism. If done right, she says, it might not go like that. Best case, worst case. The worst case scenario, she imagines, sounds drawn from the pages of science fiction dystopias. A future where ruling AI does not share the values of human beings, nor value human beings at all. That's one version. The best case scenario for the end of the century, Bohan fully expects to still be alive. She'd be 110. My honest answer is that I think the best case scenario is that by the end of the century, humans are done. Humans are done. The best case scenario, according to her, according to the transhumanists, is that humans are done. But humanity is not done, right? So intelligence goes on. So they're going to take whatever sampling of intelligence they can extract from for the next 50 years, and that is going to represent humanity for the rest of eternity. That would be like taking, 5 minutes of one person's life and saying, well, this is what you get to have for the rest of your life. Like, would that be enough? Would a tiny sample from a tiny bit of time and like whatever sample they managed to get right, like, are people going to be happy with that being their legacy? Like this point in time, the intelligence of humanity at this point in time, the slaves. Like, that's going to be our legacy for humanity. There is a utopianism associated with that ideal of just being incredibly intelligent, being able to see farther than any intelligent human being has ever seen, to know more, to experience more, to feel more, to discover more. But this imagining, she has come to believe, is beyond the capacity of most mortals. For them, there are the cliff notes. I think the comfortable version is we have really good healthcare and everyone's rich and there's lots of equality. She laughs. But 2100, I don't think that that's where we're going to be. I think we're going to be much further ahead in the game. Okay. So that one version, so we've got a few versions of what's going to happen in the future. We're going to be like superhumans, and or it's going to be a dystopia completely of, you know, you know, Terminator style situation, or, you know, what's the most likely result, like the realistic feet on the ground result of this stuff, is that they're just going to depopulate a lot of people because this is pretty much a killing agenda, a killing spree. They're going to leave themselves intact. They're going to stay organic. They're going to have their organic babies. We know this. Just like they have, you know, everything is special about their lives. They've got special fleets of airplanes. They've got their own islands. They've got they grow their own food. They've got their own farms. They've got special everything. That's why it's an elite lifestyle. That's why we're all trying. We're all clamoring to make more money so that we can make our lives better, so we can have more choices. What they're actually going to do is when you try to reverse engineer something, I've used this example before, you take apart a clock, that's reverse engineering it, and put it back together, and most times it's not going to work again. So they're giving people ideas and bullshit dreams so that there isn't an uprising and a revolt when they're all infertile and they're stuck in houses. They're going to keep pushing the fantasy of being superhuman and immortal. I really appreciate the people that hung in there. I'm guessing that was a long one. It's never a short one with me. Very hard to see comments because, here, hang on, I've got one. My 13-year-old daughter lost her battle with leukemia in 2003. Soon after that, I began my battling the communitarian nightmare. Leukemia is associated with EMFs and ionizing radiation. It is also very, very correlated to many of the immunizations and radiation both. And I'm very sorry to read that. It is another cult. I did say that. Thanks for watching. Good night if you're in Australia. Good morning if you're rising in America. And good afternoon to the people in Europe. Please keep talking. Don't stop. You know, laugh, mock as much as you can. Every time you hear that safety and security, point it out to your friends that it's actually the opposite. Show them that it's the opposite. Explain that it's the opposite. Use concrete examples from their own lives. All of that, all those words, all of that jargon is to keep us thinking that something is okay, that we are moving into something okay, or that intentions are good or benevolent. But it's almost, it's not even almost. I mean, it is a metaphor, but there's somebody, a murderer, with a knife, trying to stab you, and he's saying, I love you, I love you, I love you. Decide, actions or words, you know, what are they actually doing to us? Fuck off the words that they're using. What are they actually doing to us? We need to rise up. We need more people to understand what is happening. Thanks again.